Welcome, and congratulations. I'm delighted that you could make it. Getting here wasn't easy. I know, in fact, I suspect it was harder than you realized. To begin with, for you to be here now, trillions of drifting atoms had to somehow assemble in an intricate and intriguingly obliging manner to create you. It's an arrangement so specialized and particular that it has never been tried before and will only exist this once. For the next many years, we hope, these tiny particles will uncomplainingly engage in all the billions of deft, cooperative efforts necessary to keep you intact and let you experience the supremely agreeable, but generally underappreciated state known as existence. Why atoms take this trouble is a bit of a puzzle. Being you is not a gratifying experience on the atomic level. For all their devoted attention, your atoms don't really care about you. Indeed, they don't even know that you are there. They don't even know that they are there. They are mindless particles, after all, not even themselves alive. Yet somehow, for the period of your existence, they will answer to a single overarching impulse, to keep you, you. So thank goodness for atoms, but the fact that we have atoms that assemble in such a willing manner is only part of what got you here. To be here now, alive in the 21st century, and smart enough to know it, you had to be the beneficiary of an extraordinary string of biological good fortune. Survival on Earth is a surprisingly tricky business. Of the billions and billions of species that have existed since the dawn of time, most, 99.99%, are no longer around. Life on Earth, you see, is not only brief, but dismayingly tenuous. It's a curious feature of our existence that we come from a planet that is very good at promoting life, but even better at extinguishing it. Not only have you been lucky enough to be attached since time immemorial to a favored evolutionary line, but you have also been miraculously fortunate in your personal ancestry. Consider the fact that for 3.8 billion years, a period of time that is older than Earth's mountains and rivers and oceans, every one of your forebears on both sides has been attractive enough to find a mate, healthy enough to reproduce, and sufficiently blessed by fate and circumstance to do so. Not one of your pertinent ancestors was squashed, devoured, drowned, starved, stranded, stuck fast, untimely wounded, or otherwise deflected from its life's quest of delivering a tiny genetic material to the right partner, at the right moment, in order to perpetuate the only possible sequence of hereditary combinations that could result eventually, astoundingly, and all too briefly, in you. To be human is to search for God, or gods, or goddesses. To be human is to search for answers, often to questions that may not have them. Since time immemorial, we as a species have wanted to know where we come from, and why the world is as it is. For most of our history, the answer has been that things are as God, or gods, will it to be. But such answers do not satisfy everyone. Many people wanted to know the mind of God and have a deeper understanding of the ways of the world, a free and responsible search for truth and meaning. This brings me to the topic of today, of the overlap between science and religion. This is a broad topic, and large, hefty tomes can be written on the subject. I know, as I have several at home. Both of these are topics that have played a large role in my life. I have just finished my master's in geology from Lakehead, but there was a time during my first year at Queen's University I seriously considered changing my major to religious studies. As Unitarian Universalists, one of the sources we draw upon is humanist teachings, which counsel us to heed the guidance and reason and the results of science and warn us against idolatries of the mind and spirit. I feel, however, this doesn't capture the whole essence of science. Oftentimes, science is thought of as a static knowledge base. I know many people who think we have everything figured out and have, for the most part, understood everything for a long time. This couldn't be further from the truth. The idea of plate tectonics only came about in most of your lifetimes. And yet, it is fundamental for our modern understanding of the world. In the words of Carl Sagan, Science is more than a body of knowledge. It's a way of thinking, a way of skeptically interpreting the universe. It is through this skeptical investigation of the world that our place in the universe has radically changed over the recent centuries. Many of the early Western scientists had preconceived notions about the universe that stemmed from their religious beliefs. Our world was at the center of the universe. The stars were held up in a celestial crystal sphere surrounding the planet. Fossil shells were a remnant of Noah's flood. Man, handcrafted by God to have dominion over nature. As time passes, these beliefs have been radically challenged, and new ideas have emerged with evidence to support them. We now know in much more detail where our place is in both space and time. No longer is our world the center of the entire universe, but a small rock circling the sun in the outer spiral arm of the Milky Way. No longer are we separate from the animals, but we see in them our kin. All sibling species brought about by evolution, struggling together and against each other on this planet. Many young Earth creationists I've talked to balk over this idea. To paraphrase several conversations, how can we be special if we are not made by God? But I think in a way we are made by God. Perhaps not the being of the Abrahamic faiths, but the God that Einstein knew. Einstein's definition of God is that it was that of all of the laws of nature, the universe itself. Using this view on God, we are not only special, but incredibly so, for we are the way in which the universe knows itself. This understanding of our place in the cosmos does not diminish the majesty of all there is. The poet William Blake may be best known for saying, "To see the world in a grain of sand, and heaven in a wildflower. Hold infinity in the palm of your hand, and eternity in an hour." This poem has always spoke to me, and it's only an excerpt of a larger poem. But studying geology has only added depth to it. In each grain of sand I see, I bear witness to majestic forces at work. I see the formation of a quartz crystal in a deep magma chamber, cooling over millions of years. Billions of years of continents shifting and crashing, mountains being built and eroded by rivers and glaciers. I see the forces of nature tearing down rock, sand grain by sand grain. I see the entire history of the world, the universe, in a fragment of the crystal. In a wildflower, I can see the elements feeding it, born from the Big Bang, forged in a crucible of superheated stars. The evolution of life, the birth of the first flowering plants 125 million years ago. My hand, though it appears empty, I know the atoms have existed long before me and will continue long after I'm gone. Though I'm only here for the briefest of moments, I see I am going back with nature and the planet. While many religions often take issue with these findings, common grounds can be found. The Dalai Lama himself not only accepts science, but welcomes it with open arms. In his words, "As in science, so in Buddhism, understanding the nature of reality is pursued by critical investigation. If scientific analysis were conclusively to demonstrate certain claims in Buddhism were to be false, then we must accept the findings of science and abandon these claims." He does, however, highlight one of the key issues of science, the dangers of falling into a completely materialistic, perhaps even nihilistic worldview. Many aspects of reality, as well as some of the key elements of human existence, such as the ability to distinguish between good and evil, spirituality, artistic creativity, some of the things we value most as human beings, inevitably fall outside the scope of the scientific method. Scientific knowledge, as it stands today, is not complete. His thoughts highlight the need for places like Lakehead Unitarian Fellowship, a place for a free and responsible search for truth and meaning, where human teachings counsel us to heed the guidance of reason and the results of science, and ward us against idolatries of the mind and spirit, along with the spiritual teachings of Earth-centered traditions, which celebrate the sacred circle of life and instruct us to live in harmony with the rhythms of nature.